This is episode number 105, and this time we have not one, not two, but three guests.
Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Super Data Science Podcast. I'm super excited because the Data Science Go 2017 conference has just completed. I'm literally still in the hotel in San Diego where it all took place past weekend, and it was a blast. We had almost 200 people attend and hundreds more watching on the live stream online. We had some amazing speakers, amazing guests. We'll definitely talk more about that in the coming weeks. But for now, what I wanted to do today is share one of the sessions that we had. And that session was a panel discussion. So on Sunday, on day two of the conference, we had a panel discussion where all of the attendees were able to submit questions through Twitter, through a special hashtag, and we were answering those questions. So basically, I was running the panel discussion. I was asking our three guests the questions from the audience, and they were giving their views. So we've got almost an hour or about an hour of questions and answers, and I think you will find them very insightful. We had quite a lot of laughs and quite a lot of insightful answers. And our three guests at the panel discussion were Ben Taylor, who you will, if you've been listening to the podcast, you will know all three of our guests. But if you don't know Ben Taylor, then he is a thought leader in the space of data science. He's a CEO he's a founder of his own company with some partners called Ziff.ai, where they create artificial intelligence and deep learning products. Very, very motivational person, and I follow Ben Taylor myself all the time. I've learned a lot from him. Also, we have Adlan de Pontevez, who's my very good friend and business partner. He was also in the panel discussion, and he is the co-author, along with me, of courses such as machine learning, deep learning, A to Z, computer vision, A to Z, AI, artificial intelligence, A to Z. And also on the panel, we had Yuri Sir, who has also been on the podcast. Yuri is the head of talent acquisition for a company called Collective AI, which is a data science and artificial intelligence consulting company on the East Coast of the US. So there we go. That's our panel for today. And I can't wait for you guys to learn all these amazing insights from them and have some laughs along with us. And without further ado, I bring to you the DS Go 2017 panel. Welcome to the panel discussion. So we got a lot of questions, like a ton of questions come through. Got them here on my phone. You already know everybody. We've got Yuri, who's just on stage, Ben, Adlan. I think it's a good mix of skills, expertise. If you have more questions, send them through along the way. And okay, off we go. So you guys excited?
Yes.
So excited.
Awesome. Of course.
All right. First question, how do you respond to people who think that AI is in the hype cycle? Maybe Ben, you're the best to start this one.
That's fine, they can say that, but people are making a lot of money. So money drives everything, and there's success stories. I've seen companies who have 10x'd their market capability because of AI. Mm-hmm. So as the success stories come through, that's not hype. That's real evaluations, real revenue. Self-driving cars, that's not hype. Like once we start seeing, you know, trucks and deaths going down. So it depends on the application.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Adlan?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of communication around AI, and that plays with the hype. Some of the communication is wrong, like I hear saying that AI is exponential. Well, that depends on how you see it. Research is not exponential. We still have a lot to progress with research. So definitely this will be long-term, and for me, it will last for another very long time.
Okay. Next question will probably start with you, Yuri, this one. How can you address work-life balance? How do you transition from working each day to working from home?
That's a fantastic question. So work-life balance, I feel those who are, I should start off by saying, are successful, you know, working from home. What working from home means really is what you guys or candidates feel, or employees, I should say, feel most comfortable with the environment to be most productive. So interesting fact, I know I might come off as an extrovert, but I'm actually a mixture. I'm an ambivert. So when I'm in work mode, I love to just hide, and I like to just be in a corner off somewhere. And that's how I work best. I want no distractions, and I just don't want any interaction. So working from home really works for me. So I guess, you know, I hope that answers that question. It's like to find that balance. I think it's okay to... Am I answering the question? I feel like I'm missing what the question is.
Yeah, no, that's good. So how can you address work-life balance? And more important, like the next stage, how do you transition from working each day at work to working from home?
Yeah, I think it's just that, you know, optimally set up your space to feel most comfortable, you know, as far as working from home, but that transition, you know, the coming from working with, you know, 20 people to 300-person company and then all of a sudden being by yourself. I think if the question is more about how do I stay connected, you know, there's always forms of communication like Slack and so forth, or, you know, to remember to engage with your team. But working from home, I think, will definitely be more beneficial to those who are, you know, who have a certain work process and a workflow. Mm-hmm. Just about, you know, really setting that up and getting that process in place and just reiterating that.
All right. Yeah. How about you, Ben? You work from home, right?
I work from everywhere.
Yeah.
Starbucks. I'm going to plug Starbucks right now. Yeah, so I work at Starbucks a lot, just all over the place where I am. I love Starbucks. So I think one of the things that's changed in my mind is I kind of see this as an efficiency play. And it's not about your hourly efficiency. It's about your weekly throughput. Mm-hmm. Where my first job working for Intel Micron is about butts and seats. Where actually I had a complaint come in against me through HR that Ben's butt is not in this seat. But I was working from different areas, working on different things. So we kind of obsessed about our weekly efficiency. And we've realized I am much more effective working in a Starbucks or all by myself with my headphones on, the Bose, noise canceling. And if I need to go skiing, it's more about the weekly efficiency. It's not about, hey, you didn't work 8 to 5 today. So work-life balance, that kind of goes into your overall emotional state, well-being, mm-hmm. your relationships with your loved ones, happiness. Because I can imagine a scenario where I work 100 weeks or 100 hours in a week and I don't get as much done as I was able to do in 40 hours. So work-life balance is important.
Gotcha. But how does somebody approach their employer with that conversation, saying that actually I'll get more done for you if I sit at a Starbucks?
So that's hard when you're working for a more traditional company. With the once you kind of break into the space and you build out a reputation and you're top of the game, you can really ask for whatever you want. So David, my co-founder, when he used to work for companies, he would tell them, I'm only coming into the office once a week. And they didn't really know how to handle that. But it was, if you want my attention on your problem, I'm coming into the office once a week. Because he's kind of an introvert. Yeah. He's more efficient when he doesn't come to the office.
Yeah.
And then we had another data scientist at HireVue. If you wanted his attention, he demanded 4 months of ski vacation. And that, like, people would laugh. But we went through attempting to hire him with that on the line, that he needs 4 months of ski vacation. And he's still going to make more than most data scientists make with 4 months of ski vacation. Where once you kind of get to the top of the game, if your employer is not working with you, there are lots of employers that will... And you have the perks of the developers, like the Xboxes and anything goes kind of an environment. So
more flexible.
So you have to find the right employer, and there are definitely employers out there that are too black and white. They're traditional. They'll see these requests as being very, very strange and kind of out of control. But if you're offering the value, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, gotcha. I can relate to that. I've been doing that from kind of, like, if you're high level, you can demand whatever you want. If you're like slowly getting to high level, you slowly can demand more and more. When I started this habit, it's a bad habit. I started this in high school. I was like, I'm not coming to school on Wednesdays. I only did school Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, just because I didn't feel like it and still finished. And And then with my previous employer also, like at some point I was like, I can get the job done in 4 days. I'm not going to come to work on Wednesdays. I'm not even going to work on Wednesdays. I'm going to get the job done. You know, like if we agreed on a salary range, whatever, but I need that time to work on my own projects. And if you are valuable to them, they will meet you. So sometimes, I think Yuri mentioned this, like you got to have the courage to have that conversation. What's the worst that can happen? And Adlan, like what are the biggest challenges for working from home?
Yes, well, I have a terrible work-life balance because I work all the time. And you know, since we're launching a course every month, well, I always want to not lose a second. And therefore, I only take a break, like a big break going out on a weekend or going for short holidays between each course, between production of each course. So, and I don't think that's good. I think I should sometimes tell myself that it's okay if I don't progress today. It's okay if I'll progress tomorrow. If I need something to be done today, I can tell myself, okay, I can do it tomorrow. So I should really work on that because, working all the time is good, but sometimes you need to live your life.
Yeah. And I think just to reiterate kind of what you hit on a little bit, that I think if you can convince your employer to hold you accountable on a week time scale or a 2 week scale,
yep,
then the fact that you didn't come into work today doesn't, yeah, but I completed the sprint.
Yep.
So focus on the deliverables and not the, you know, button seat hourly.
Yep. Yep. There's a good book about it. It's called, I think, The Fourth Economy, and it's also referenced in The End of Jobs by Taylor Pearson. And he talks about that the 9-to-5 that originally came from the Industrial Revolution, where the amount of time you spend at work is proportional to your output because you're on a conveyor belt. We don't live in that time anymore. It's not about the time, it's about the effort, the creativity, the ingenuity that you put into your work. You can get, like, personally, if I work, I know for myself, I work between the hours of 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. In those 4 hours, I can get done the amount of work I usually get done in 2 days, just because I'm more productive then. So it also, you know, ties into a lot of those things. Okay, next one, a data science question for change. How is machine learning going to meet traditional BI, Ben?
Oh, BI?
Business intelligence, yeah.
I think it will do some of the discovery. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny because sometimes as humans we get excited about creativity. Like, look what I found or look what I did. But as soon as you see a pattern, a lot of times AI can come in and automate that. So if I'm going through and I notice some correlation or a regression or some relationship between two variables, with programming in Python, you could easily just crank out an entire report that stack ranks whatever vanity metric you care about. So I think some of that will slowly kind of become more and more automated. And a lot of the providers of BI software, they have AI on the roadmap. They're looking at ways to accelerate the actionable insight. But I think it'll be a slow transition.
Gotcha. Okay. Adlan?
Well, I think it already met, machine learning already met with BI. I think there's going to be some more and more automation. For example, let's take data robot. Data robot, you just give the inputs, it gives you some output. I think it could automate like some of the processes in the BI problems. So definitely it will bring a lot of contribution.
Thank you. What's the one critical failure you had in your career and how did you overcome it? Let's go one by one. Yuri, what is your critical failure?
My critical failure?
Yeah.
It's like an interview question.
You're on the other side.
I know.
Have it show us strength.
Yeah, whatever.
What's your weakness? I work too much.
Yeah, actually, I was gonna go with. So, I at a job interview, I decided to switch things up and actually share my transparent vulnerability. And when I was asked the question of what my weaknesses were and what my failure was, is that I had this issue where I overpromised and always felt like I was under-delivering. And it's because, you know, when you want to say yes, 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 and be that yes person, I know it could be really scary to push back and to feel like you don't want to have your superior feel like you're not, you know, doing enough or contributing enough, or, you know, saying no is like a scary thing. And I was very honest on an interview stating that, you know, next time around, you know, I failed a lot because, or I should say their failures that I've had was because I wasn't very upfront and I wasn't transparent and set the expectations and communicate that to my superior. And so some projects, you know, didn't work out the way it should have because I was too afraid to admit that, you know, to admit that these expectations are just above and beyond, you know, and to explain or connect with my superior that, you know, let's try to see what's more manageable as far as expectations and being upfront.
Thank you. One. Ben? Except for that skiing accident where you broke your teeth.
Well, restate the question so I can make sure.
What's the one critical failure you had in your career and how did you overcome it?
Okay. So I think one of the consistent failures I've had, maybe not a failure, but hindsight's always 20/20, so you can look back and have regrets, is ripping the Band-Aid off sooner for different technology stacks. So when I was an undergrad, we had a professor that told all of us we should reformat our laptops and install Gentoo, which is probably not, that's actually not a good recommendation. But his recommendation to switch to Linux was constantly said, and I ignored him until I graduated with my undergrad, and then I committed to changing, which was painful. But hindsight, I had lots of regrets that what would have happened if I had switched 3 years earlier. So switching to Linux was one, starting to write documents in LaTeX, however you want to say it, ramping on Vim, and more importantly, abandoning MATLAB and switching to Python, which was very hard. And I've talked to some people here where some of you guys are rock stars with your commercial platforms, but what you don't realize is you're greatly limited on your ability to accelerate cycle time, provide value, and stay up to date. So that's a very hard transition. So hindsight, I wish I had transitioned much sooner because now I have regrets of, you know, not transitioning sooner. And I think right now I'm going through one with PyCharm. So I do all my development in Vim, and my co-founder has switched to PyCharm, which I see as being more powerful and more useful, but you kind of have this safety net. And that will probably be another one. When I switch to PyCharm, I'll have regrets of, well, I could have done this sooner.
Opportunity cost.
Yeah, opportunity cost, exactly.
Gotcha. Adlan?
Yeah, I think my failure was the first try, second try, and third try of the RNN we implemented for the deep learning course. But now I'm happy to tell you that it's solved. Like, I re-implemented the model. I re-recorded the RNN part recently. So that's good.
Okay, thank you. A question for Yuri. Have you ever taken a leap of faith on a candidate who lacked major skill sets you were looking for and why?
Ooh, tough question. I have. But let's define major lack of skill sets. I mean, if you're not even a fit for the role or the opportunity, I can't take that chance because it's not even, there's no connection. But if a candidate or candidates in the past have had that true connection to that role, and because they were so devoted and passionate about it, they were already halfway in. You know, I knew that it didn't matter if they lacked, you know, a quarter of the skill set, they're going to ramp up and they're going to get it. And they're going to exceed far more than anyone who's just like, oh yeah, fancy me, I have all these technology stacks.
Mm, thank you. Okay, an interesting question, and one I also wanted to ask just came through from you guys. So you talked about the disbalance in supply and demand, and even that there's a report by Burning Glass Technologies saying that data science roles, job description or job posts for data science roles are open for 45 days, whereas the average is 40 days, so that's 5 days longer than average. So that talks about the insufficient supply. When do you think this disbalance will even out? How long will this last?
I think it'll shift sooner than later. Probably give it to be fair, I mean, I would guesstimate probably 72 months at most, you know, hopefully.
72 months?
Yeah. And I don't know, so
3 years?
Accurate. Yeah, three years.
That's some quick math right there.
Yeah. Reason I say this is because, you know, companies out there are still trying to transfer and make that process over to really understanding what the landscape of data science looks like. So don't be fooled, just because if they're not the, you know, the Googles or the Facebooks or the Netflix, you know, those guys get it. But for the rest of the world, they are catching up on trying to understand, you know, what the requirements really are needed for their particular role that they're trying to fill in data science. So that's gotcha. It's going to take that process
all
to
right.
move over, but it will.
Ben, do you agree? Higher or lower? What's your estimate?
Yeah, I think that's a good estimate that it will continue, but then there will be some contraction period. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that contraction will actually be driven by software, mm-hmm. where I don't need to hire an entry level because DataRobot or some other provider actually does everything, and I can have an intern or some junior analyst who does not have our background doing it. There will always be very competitive jobs for the top tier. So I would encourage people, just reckless commitment, just dive head first, get entry level, but become an expert in deep learning and what's state of the art, and you won't have to worry about positions and job security.
Okay, that's a very interesting estimate. Don't you guys think that while companies will figure out ways to like solve that problem for themselves and these roles will get filled, don't you think that there are still tons of companies out there who are not even considering data scientists, and the amount of companies companies going to come online is going to increase as well with time, so there will be new roles in those spaces. What do you think about that?
Well, and I think that's why like the next three to 4 years, you're going to see demand increasing, mm-hmm. where more and more companies. So it's interesting because 2 years ago, we were actually worried that we started our startup too late, like we missed the wave. And we realized like, no, that's not true, because 2 years ago, executives were not asking for AI. It was not part of the board meeting discussion, where now it is, where we actually have executives that have decided an AI mandate, and you're gonna see that more and more, where now that will be the expectation.
So you started at the right time.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy. Yeah.
Okay. Question for Adlan. How would you advise students in a maths major to better prepare themselves in getting a job in machine learning?
Well, first of all, they're in a math major, so that's a huge plus to start in machine learning pretty efficiently. So my advice is to read the best books, again. Even the deep ones, like even the highly theoretical ones, because thanks to the math background they have, they could understand, for example, Introduction to Statistical Learning, Elements of Statistical Learning, which are the best books. They could understand also the deep learning by Ian Goodfellow and Yoshua Benjo. So that's great. And besides, what I highly recommend once they understand the basics of machine learning is that they can go to the research papers. Research papers are full of math, and you actually need a math background to understand them because you don't have all the details. So yeah, read the best books, best online resources, and research papers.
Cool. Would you agree?
So I failed my first linear algebra class in college because it was so boring. So boring. No real world applications. And then later, years later, I found out on my own that I love it. It's one of my favorite topics. Mm. But it's only my favorite if it's taught through machine vision and image processing and something that's actually tangible. Mm-hmm. Where some of these math departments, it's terrible. So
interesting. So it almost sounds like if you're studying math, who's studying math in the audience? Okay, we've got a couple of people. If you're studying math, then along the way, you can just look for those real-life applications via machine learning and understand what you're studying, how is it actually going to be useful to you in the future.
Yeah, and there are so many fantastic examples in image processing. So everything you guys are covering, you're eye candy.
Okay, next question. About the future. So, Ben, AI and deep learning in the future and the possibilities that come with it.
Yeah, so last year, Baidu was the first company to announce superhuman speech, and Microsoft has announced it this year as well, which means they have speech nets that are getting better than a 4% word error rate, and that opens up so many possibilities, not today, but in the next 3 years. Just like we're addicted to our phones, we will all be addicted soon to our personal assistants. We'll have virtual personal assistants that follow us on our phone, in our homes, in our car. No more note-taking. No more... the Siri is not state-of-the-art when it comes to voice recognition. But in the future, you can have more natural conversations with all of your appliances where they're not these canned responses that are expected right now. And I think that's going to be wonderful, and I think every home in the future will have a GPU in your home to handle all your video streams, all the audio streams, and to support this virtual assistant. who maybe someday you'll fall in love with them, like that one movie, Her.
Yeah.
Which is a great movie. Some people might think it's weird, but I think it's funny.
Gotcha. Adlan?
I totally agree with Ben. And as we said, as you said, actually, in one of our courses, in the future, everybody will use a machine learning, probably have a GPU in their home, as today everybody uses an iPhone. So I totally agree with that, and I don't think it's going to come in a long time. Pretty short time.
Yeah. Well, and there's a huge wave happening right now. It hasn't happened yet. The iPhone X has an AI chip in it.
Yes.
And Apple has made a huge investment in supporting deep learning and XGBoost model exports to the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening, there's a lag where the iPhone developers have no idea what that even means. We know what it means. So I think in the next 2 years, you're going to see a huge ramp in amazing AI apps where I don't have to connect to the network. Mm. And you'll hopefully have a Siri competitor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but is this understanding correct? Right now, if I want to do for the phone to recognize my speech and put it into text, I have to be connected to the internet.
Yeah. Well, technically now, in the old phone. Your old phone will still run.
Yeah.
So Apple has Core ML, and you can export Keras, MXNet, Cafe. You can export all those models to your current phone, but it will destroy your battery. So you'll be mad because in 30 minutes your battery will be dead. Maybe not true, but with the new iPhone X, it can just hum along.
So now they're in building these functionalities inside the phones.
Yeah, so you could do a better speech recognition on that phone, but you may not. And I think, you may not appreciate your usability.
Gotcha. Okay. What are the three most important areas to master to be a great data scientist? How about we all contribute one? Ben, the most important area that you think.
Do you want to be technical or behavioral or?
I don't know. Let's go behavioral.
Technical?
Technical. Okay. Technical.
Technical.
Who wants technical? Who wants behavioral? Technical it is.
Maybe we do technical and behavioral.
Oh, there we go. Solve
so technically, absolutely deep learning. It's prime time. It's not a fad. It's not going to go away. Become an expert in all things deep learning. Behavioral, I'll take the one that we've all been seeing. Passion.
Passion.
Low-hanging fruit. Have passion.
Good choice. Good choice. Yes. Lock it in. Yuri?
Yeah, I would agree with the same thing. Deep learning, definitely invest in that. That's not going to go away. In fact, that's our future. And two, for behavioral, conceptualization. Don't be afraid to be a little crazy, because crazy gets you answers. It gets you closer to, you know, really actually defining that accurate picture.
What do you mean by conceptualization?
So my experience of interviewing data science candidates, one of the things that, you know, many companies actually screen for is just your thought process. Thought process meaning of like how are you what you're thinking, not ability is like, but how you're conceptualizing. You know, how are you making your correlations? You know, how does this make sense? And how, you know, when people say abstract, no, really, explain your abstract. You know, and maybe I use crazy in the term of abstract, but it's okay to, you know, try your best to explain that, or, you know, practice on how you explain your abstract.
Gotcha. I'd love
so, yeah, technical, definitely AI. So to complement deep learning, like, for example, the A3C model, deep reinforcement learning that goes with deep learning, but, you know, there is the reinforcement learning part. And behavioral, business sense. Mm-hmm. We need a business sense to understand how a data science can optimize the business, how it can help contribute, bring added value. And that's extremely important. I actually learned that in Google.
Next question is from people who are just looking for their first job. How do you find the first job for a fresh candidate? Where would you look for one? Ben?
If I had to go find a job for a first candidate?
Yeah, you were looking for your first
job. If I was looking for my first job, the way I approach this problem is I actually don't care about my first job. What I care about is the job I'm going to have in 3 years. So I actually might take a job that is not preferred, but it's going to get me exactly where I want to be in 3 years. So I may take a pay cut, work for an anchor brand, and then land my three-year job. Or that might help me sift through the opportunities So I'd look for a job that gave me, if it wasn't going to kind of build up my reputation to land a bigger job, I'd look for a job that gave me a lot of problem variety. Because some jobs, you're going to be very good at just structured data, or there's like one thing, and that's not what I would want. I'd want a job that allowed me to kind of hit on all different types of problems, and they had buy-in from management on AI, and ideally some mentors at the company. Some companies had some very strong data science teams that have reputations, so I'd love to get in with something like that, even if I had to take a big pay cut. Because it's not about the pay. You know, the goal is to be where you want to be in 3 years, and the path to get there may not be it may not be intuitive. Like, you have to really think through that.
Gotcha. How about you, Yuri? Where would you, like, from your perspective, where do you look for candidates? Where is the best place for them to go for you to find them?
I think it's everywhere, really. I mean, there's not one. I know that's like, wait, that sucks. Like, what do you mean everywhere? But again, connection is important. And just to piggyback off of that, that was great. You know, your first job should really be about, yes, you know, devote your passion in it. But think about, you know, think ahead. You know, like, this is where I want to go. So leverage what you can. I would say, you know, as far as just listing out the opportunities or where you can go, I mean, LinkedIn, you have Glassdoor, you have, well, local to New York, there's Built in NYC. There's many different types of hiring platforms that you can, you know, show your visibility on. But again, the more organic approach is always, you know, sometimes even the faster approach, you know, is just really connecting directly with the opportunity. So if you are, you know, entering a Kaggle competition, you know, check to see who you can connect with. Or if you're connecting someone with over a Stack Overflow, I've connected somebody through that way as well, right? And for your first opportunity, I would definitely say startups are a lot more, I don't want to say that they are looser on their skill sets, but they are flexible because they are in the same position and same boat too. They're trying to launch their, you know, their startup. And regardless how it is, you know, whether it be one, two, three people on a team or a 15-person team, it is a great opportunity for someone who's first starting off to say, okay, I have the basics, but this is where I have to grow and ramp up. You are gaining that ability. And just because there's less of a handholding or less of a structure, it actually makes for a fantastic developer or data scientist because they've had to, you know, overcome so many battles being in just like a position where they have to wear many different hats.
Okay, thank you. What's the most memorable interview that you've had with a data scientist? Same question for you, Ben. You've hired tons.
Not tons, but a handful. Memorable interview, good or bad?
Either.
So my old employer, HireVue, they have the world's largest interview repository of video interviews, which means they have outliers. And they have famous outliers. And there's an outlier where an individual did an entire interview with one word. Tell me about your previous experience and your background. Python. Tell me about what you like to do for fun. Python. And it was like the entire interview. And of course the answer was no, but we always kind of joked internally that this guy may have been a genius with Python, which could have been useful. And maybe for that role, you didn't need social skills and stuff. And they could have passed on a rock star. And we, you know, we should really go like follow up and see what happened to this guy. But you know, you see stuff like that. So one of the first data scientists I hired, he actually failed one of the interview questions, and that was one of the things that stood out the most. Or he didn't fail it, but we expected them to have natural language processing. And we wanted them to have experience, and there was a question that said, tell us about your experience with natural language processing. And he said, well, I actually don't have experience. I haven't done any projects with it, but I'm going to tell you what I know about it. And his response about what he knew about it was better than all the others that said they had done stuff like sentiment models and built stuff out. So we hired him. Oh. And we've been thrilled with him. He's been a fantastic hire, and he's really developed and grown and really become an expert in all things data science, where... So sometimes not having experience, but just showing that you have good breadth and you care about the space. So that was maybe the most memorable. Actually, him not having experience was his strongest trait, because you compared, okay, all of these data scientists have experience, but I want to hire this person.
Well, So that really ties in well with what you said, Yuri, in your talk. Yeah, just say what you know about it, what you found, what you researched about it. Great example of that. Okay. Adlan, you mentioned the business sense is an important thing.
Very important.
How do I learn business skills like marketing, operations, supply chain, to be able to relate and apply my data skills to solve a real business problem? So how do you develop that business sense?
This time, I don't believe that courses or books are the best way. I think experience is the best way. So I would recommend to work in companies, like consulting companies, do some data science missions to optimize some business, to optimize cost reduction or revenue optimization. And actually, you don't have to look for a consulting company. You can actually do that in every company. Every company has a finance department or a BI department. Well, not everyone, but most of companies have a finance or BI department. And in these departments, you really develop the business sense. And you can use data science to optimize the business, work on the BI. And I think it's a great way to develop the business sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And would you agree, Ben?
Business sense. Most data scientists don't have a strong business sense.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's hard. How do you get people to appreciate money? So I think one of the negative traits I see is what I call the academic behavior, where someone with a strong business sense, they don't have that. They'll kill a pet project. And they won't overcomplicate a problem. They'll start simple. Yeah, I don't know how you teach that, how to...
All right, do you think that every data scientist needs a business sense, or there are certain...
No,
types?
You need at least one. So one data scientist who's a lead or managing that group is essentially babysitting really smart people that can do tasks, but they're deciding that, I know that problem you've been assessing about, I'm actually going to pull the plug on it because you haven't delivered value in 2 weeks, and we've got have to you work on something else. So not every data scientist needs the business sense, but... having the business sense puts you in a position to be that lead data scientist, that chief data scientist, that chief data officer. The seven-figure salaries coming from these Fortune 100 companies, they need a data scientist that has very strong business sense and very strong communication skills. And then they want IP, because every company obsesses about IP. But I think business and communication are...
Two things. One is what your CEO wants you to know by Ram Charan. It's a very smart book.
What your CEO wants to know?
Yeah.
So that's a book? Oh, okay. That sounds like a good book for data scientists.
Small book. That's one thing. The second one is try to pick up some new principles. New Six Sigma.
Okay.
Those two are good brainstorming into data science.
Okay. And a third book I throw out there is, so I want to make sure I mention the second one. So Lean Skills. Lean Six Sigma Skills. So a third book I really like is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. Where this was very different for the way I behaved as a programmer. He encourages you to fail fast, and what can I do to pretend like I've delivered value? And that's something I see as a huge, someone with strong business sense, if I ask you to do a project, you might actually push back on me and say, does the customer even want this project? Let's go fake a presentation. Let's actually fake results. Let's fake some data science results and show it to a customer advisory board. That data scientist is gold, because they've understand the business sense, and they just protected me from a 2-month commit mistake, which that's happened to me. We've committed 2 months of resources, shipped, we've got all the way to validation, and the customer doesn't want it. But internally, it sounded like a high five data science idea.
Interesting.
I would just like to add that I agree with you that not everybody in the team needs business sense, especially the data scientists. However, if one data scientist hopes to evolve, hopes to evolve in management positions, for example, lead, I think it would need to start working on developing a business sense. Otherwise, if a data scientist keeps focused on his expertise, on his very high technical skills, well, he will stay in that position, I think, forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some people are happy to do that, but if you want to grow, you need to develop a business sense.
Do you mind if I ask a question?
Yeah.
So something I've been obsessing about is I want to hire a data scientist that is unblocked. They don't get blocked on anything. I don't know, what's that skill set?
Unblog?
So here's an example. So I have a data scientist working, they're working on problems, working, and they hit a wall.
Yeah.
They hit a wall where they can't advance, they can't do this, this isn't working, I can't get this piece of code to run. But there's other data scientists where they're like it's almost like they're a train. They'll just like blast through any brick wall, and it's even on things they haven't been exposed to. Like, hey, here's MXNet, I need you to take this rec file and like stream through a model.
That's,
is it curiosity?
Grit,
curiosity, grit. Like,
let's write a job description right here.
So they'd pull in outside resources and cut through red tape to get stuff done. So what traits do you hire, or what competencies or behavior would you look for me to convince you that I will be your freight train?
Sure.
And if I actually, like, it doesn't mean you can't come, I can't come talk to you, but you can focus on what matters and not have to unblock me. Like,
I would look at, like, I define it as, excuse the French, but getting shit done. Like,
yeah.
I actually put that on my resume at some point. Like, I'm a person who, I don't care about data science or anything. Like, one of my first lines is, I get shit done, full stop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you see that on a resume, hire them.
Yeah.
It might be me. It might be my resume. Yeah, yeah. Now you have a bunch of resumes. Great thing. Don't put shit to say, I get stuff done. So,
yeah. Like, just send a resume with a hand drawing of a train breaking through a brick wall and
yeah.
then, like, a picture of you.
Yeah.
Or just, like, your email.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like, yeah, so I get.
I've been trying people on this challenge bit. So you want to...
Yeah, that'd
yeah, yeah.
be great.
Can
I'm,
you get a
I'm
mic,
genuinely
yeah, please?
Curious.
I've got a pretty loud voice. So the reason why people get blocked is they get anxious. And that's sort of what it comes down to. You get to the end of your current knowledge, and then you panic, and then you don't think you can finish it, so you either put it to the side or you try and pull it off to someone else. And so the technique we've used at the Big Four to train people in this situation, because you can't do that all the time, is to deal with anxiety, learn, problem solve, and then reassess. And it's happened to study, it happened to all aspects. The anxiety is what, of not knowing the answer, is what bogs you down and blocks you. The other one is ask questions if you can, but a person who doesn't have that pressure or that trigger of anxiety when they're under pressure is someone that can generally solve problems and not panic and not get distracted. So that's,
yeah.
hopefully that answers that question.
All right. Yeah,
on
thanks.
The flip side, I do want to add to that, though. Those
yeah.
who do have anxiety but have learned to channel that anxiety and mm-hmm. overcome pressure also is really, you know, is
yeah.
something that's also
that's
important to look at for.
Exactly. They're the ones, yeah. you, want. They're the ones you want to train and challenge that. Not everyone,
yeah.
It's not natural.
Yeah.
So, so one of the things we've joked about internally is rubber ducking. So if someone asks a question, you're blocked, you have to come ask a question. We ask, have you asked the rubber duck? Because usually, just by them asking the question, like it kind of comes together. So
yeah.
I feel like there's value in asking the rubber duck in the corner your question and thinking about it. It doesn't solve all this, but it's just one thing that kind of helps with.
Yep. Another thing I'd look for is, like you mentioned about like hobbies, extracurricular activities. Sometimes when people have a major accomplishment that is super hard in one of those, like, I don't know, there's something that they had to work towards for years and years and years, like skiing, right? Like they might put that I skied this mountain. And you know that that is super insane to do that, and they must have failed many times before they got there, but they did achieve that. It's not like some people think of it as bragging, like why would I put that, you know, that I won the cooking culinary class master gold medal Iron Chef in whatever country this year. It's not about bragging, it's about showing that you can get things done even outside of work. And like, and I think as an employer, I would look at that, I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. If they made that accomplishment, that means they're a person that can persevere and get through all these roadblocks like a train, as you say. So that could be something to look for as well.
Yeah. One skill set that came out that we did not think was an important skill set for today's scientists was our CTO realized that I was better at Googling than one of our data science members. And why are you good at Googling? Because you've Googled a lot. Like,
yeah.
Where I would have never thought that was a skill set.
<That's>
like
awesome.
Finding the Stack Overflow
yeah.
or finding this information.
Yeah.
we spend a lot of time Googling.
That's right. We have to type the right keywords.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's what we do most of the time when we're creating a course.
That's right. We spend so much time Googling.
Google.
So you're expert Googlers.
I think so. Yeah, I progressed a lot.
Yeah. So two things on your resume. Two things you need to put on your resume: get things done and expert Googler. All the jobs are yours. Yuri will hire you first.
Yes. There's a website called Let Me Google That For You.
Oh, yeah.
So if someone asks you a stupid question, you Google it and you send a link, and what happens is it pops up and they watch you Google the answer.
Yeah.
I've sent it to people and they get really offended.
Yeah. Like, surprisingly.
Yeah, it's like, I'm teaching you and showing you the answer. You should be happy.
Yeah. And never contact me again.
Yeah.
Okay, and then next one. Can anyone be a part-time data scientist? For example, I might be a doctor or an attorney or a teacher or a realtor or a mom or an FT. I don't know what an FT is, but...
Full-time.
A full-time, or a mom full-time. Oh, okay. So what do you think, Yuri? Can anyone be a part-time data scientist?
Of course. I'm in HR and I took data science. You know, I still work on, you know, my personal growth in data science and absolutely appreciate that I'm in a lucky circumstance that my data science team encourages me, in fact, pressures me to, to keep up. But, it's about what you're passionate about. You know, if you enjoy it and you enjoy the subject, it's still learning. It's still growth. Mm-hmm. You never know where that growth leads you. You know, I took the course not to become, you know, a sensational data scientist overnight. I took it because it meant something to me, you know, because data matters to me and I needed to answer my own personal questions, right? Why do I overanalyze? You know, how can I use my brain to, you know, in conceptualization? You know, it just felt good. That's why I took the course. So, you know, whatever comes of it, I think it's just, if you enjoy it, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Ben, what do you think?
I think it depends on the role. I think there's tremendous value in people understanding at a high level, at the 30,000 foot level, all things data science related, because they already have the business sense, they're already fully ramped on the subject matter, and they can drive the innovation and the decisions. If I'm hiring for a technical data science position, one of the major concerns I have for someone who isn't completely full-time focused on data science is, compared to the pool of applicants, they won't have the breadth and they won't have the depth that the other applicants have.
Yep.
I think there's huge value in having both.
Yep. But even like, let's say somebody wants to be in data science, they just can't. What do you think of like freelance work, for instance, online freelance work?
I would completely count freelance as previous work history. Mm-hmm. So if HireVue, they have a new policy pretty much across the board. They will not hire someone without previous work experience. We want another company to pay the tuition.
Yep.
And that makes people upset because they say, well, if all companies do that, what does that do for all of us?
Yeah.
Freelance work, Upwork, any consulting completely counts. So if you could show someone you're billing out $150 an hour for consulting, you can ask for that six-figure salary. Like, you've shown from 3, 4, 5 different jobs, you're billing at this rate, you're definitely worth the six-figure salary, even if you haven't landed it. And I think that should be encouraging because it doesn't matter what your background is.
Yep.
You could be a dropout English major. It literally does not matter. You've successfully closed consulting.
Yep. That's great. And guys, upwork.com, if you're looking for part-time or getting some that recognition.
Amazing.
Yeah. Like we hire, at Super Data Science, we hire data scientists who answer your question in our courses. And there's an AI guy from Upwork. There's a machine learning guy. There's lots of people. There's an R data scientist, a Python data scientist. They all come from Upwork. So it's a huge marketplace. Check it out. Adlan, what are your thoughts?
I absolutely think that it's possible to combine both. I actually know a lot of people who do that. And that's because it's so easy, unless you have an exclusivity line in the contract with your full-time job. It's very easy to have a complimentary freelance job in data science. I know a lot of people who do that. So, as you say, they reached a six-figure salary this way. And thanks to Upwork, there is high demand. And, you know, you work whenever you want. You just need to get the work done. So, very easy.
Gotcha. Okay, I've got an interesting question for you guys to wrap this up. What would you do if not data science? If data science didn't exist, what would you be doing? Can't say skiing, Ben.
Okay, I won't say skiing.
All right, we'll start. Adlan, would you like to start this one?
Yes, artist.
Artist,
yeah.
As in what kind of artist?
Because I believe that the future jobs that will remain in the future will be engineers and artists. And by engineer, it's mostly AI developers, machine learning developers, all working around AI and artists. So if not AI, then artists, yeah.
Like you'd paint, you would create things?
No, I would do theater.
Theater?
Yeah, theater.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good choice. Lucky we have data science.
Yes.
You can be here. I mean like his talent would be lost in data science talent. Would not be applied. Yuri, what would you do?
Wow, so that's a tough question because I think it depends on the day.
And the day?
Yeah, different. Depends on, you know. I would say if it wasn't this, I'd probably be a pilot.
A pilot?
I love flying, you know,
just
being in the air. And also I have my biggest fear is fear of heights. Mm. So I am very scared of heights. And I think it's just one of those things, yeah. If I'm scared
you'd
the most, I want to do it. You know, so
it'd
be a pilot. And then some days, yeah, when I was very young, my first, what I wanted to be when I grow up is to definitely animate for Disney. Mm. So animation, you know, I think that's still fascinating, like 3D, or now it's like augmented reality and all those great things. So
awesome. Why would there be no job for you? Huh?
Oh, because of automation.
Automation. Yeah. Ben?
This question's easy. I'd have a fruit orchard that I tend, and I'd be a python breeder. So I'd have hundreds and hundreds of pythons.
What?
Snakes.
You'd breed
snakes. I used to be a snake breeder,
and
I would have a fruit orchard, and that would be my life.
Where did that come from?
Well,
from
So there's like this whole like black, it's not a black market because it's legal, but people trade ball pythons, and apparently the Germans and the U.S., we love it. So they have $200,000 snakes that are sold back and forth and exchanged.
Well,
I wouldn't sell the $200,000 snakes, but I would sell like the $1,000. I would just breed pythons.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
That would make me very happy.
That's so cool. So guys, if any of you are reconsidering career in data science, there's your options. Pilots, artists, snake breeders.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much, everybody.
So there you have it. That was the panel for Data Science Go 2017. I hope you enjoyed those questions and answers, and maybe you had some of the questions that you had personally answered in this panel as well. And on that note, you can find the transcript for this episode at www.superdatascience.com/105. Make sure to connect with all of our guests if you haven't yet. You can find their LinkedIn URLs on that same page. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you at the next Data Science Go conference. So next time you can ask your own questions and get answers from our future panel. And thanks a lot for tuning in today. I look forward to seeing you next time. And until then, happy analyzing.